Night Talk with Oliver Dixon.
It's 22 minutes to the top of the hour. You're listening to Night Talk. My name is Oliver Dixon. Thank you so much for your time this evening. Really, really do appreciate it. Yep, Iran has retaliated against Israel after Israel had attacked Iran's embassy. But what precipitated it, and what are the very specific politics that's playing out between Iran and Israel? Zeenat Adam, who is with the Afro Middle East Center, joins us for this conversation. Zeenat, good evening. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. What's the beef between Iran and Israel?
Good evening, Oliver. Thanks for having me on your graveyard shift.
appreciate it.
I think we certainly shouldn't lose sight of the fact that everything that is taking place currently brings us back to the genocide that's taking place in Gaza, and that Israel has been losing not just the war, despite the high casualties on the Palestinian side, but also credibility in the international community. And their action on the 1st of April in attacking the Iranian consulate in Damascus was a deliberate provocation and an invitation to Iran to get involved more directly into the war. And what we've seen over the weekend is, of course, that retaliation, based very much so on what Iran claims to be they're invoking Article 51 of the UN Charter, saying that they have the right to self-defense. But what we've also seen is absolute global hypocrisy. In any other instance, had an embassy or a consulate been attacked in the manner that it was by Israel on the 1st of April, we would have all been crying about the inviolability of diplomatic missions. We would have all been talking about the Vienna Conventions, and there would have been a strong response from the international community. But in the case of Israel, it seems that all the legalities that we have come to know within the international community have simply fallen away.
Yeah, and it seems like Israel has had the defense of many other countries, including Saudi Arabia, the US, and the UK. Iran specifically has its own tensions with those countries individually. Let's start with Saudi Arabia. What's the beef between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and why would Saudi Arabia have an incentive to come to the defense of Israel?
It isn't absolutely clear that Saudi Arabia has come to the defense. There has been some report from the Jerusalem Post, and they quoted a website that they claim to be from the Saudi royal family, but that's been debunked. However, Jordan certainly did come to the defense of Israel, and that is from a long-standing agreement that they have with Israel over a number of years, and they believe that they were in their right to act in terms of intercepting some of those aircraft, the drones in particular. But this comes at the risk of massive popular uprisings against the Jordanian monarchy for their inaction on the situation in Gaza. Now, we know that up until the onslaught on Gaza, the idea of normalization with all of these countries in the region was on the table with Israel, and Saudi Arabia was one of the key cards to be played on that. That normalization has been taken off the table since the genocide and since the situation in Gaza. So the dynamics in the region have quite altered. The beef between Saudi Arabia and Iran also has changed with China a few months ago managing to get them to the table, get them to a negotiation, and actually beyond that, getting them both to be part of BRICS. And that has shifted the global order within the Middle East quite significantly, in that the United States is no longer the ultimate player and the ultimate superpower and empire that decides how things play out in this region.
Yeah. Do you fear retributive attacks on Iran, very specifically meted out against the Palestinian people in Gaza?
I think that This was more of a distraction by the Israelis wanting to distract from the fact that they are no longer in a prime position on the situation in Gaza. We've also seen that Netanyahu's political standing is teetering. He has had a massive popular uprising in Tel Aviv against him since the situation in Gaza. And that, of course, has an impact on how he decides to play out this war. And by enacting this in Damascus, by then also provoking Hezbollah in Lebanon, it has created an instance of trying to expand the war and even trying to demonize Iran by indicating that Iran actually allies with all of these countries and that uses them as proxies. The idea behind all of this as to whether Iran is really the aggressor, I think, needs to be seen a little bit more differently. We do have an expectation that Israel may be planning a counterattack in the coming weeks. There's a lot of efforts to try and de-escalate the situation. But whilst the War Cabinet in Israel have been meeting to discuss this, the USA has said that their support for Israel is ironclad. And that again gives a contradiction from the Americans as to whether they actually want a de-escalation or if there is going to be a retaliation from the Israelis, will they support that as they had in terms of intercepting those drones and the missiles over the weekend?
Is there actual room for a de-escalation?
I think there's great effort towards a de-escalation. Nobody wants to see this turn into a regional or even global war, and the risk of that is certainly quite palpable. I don't even think that the United States wants to see this actually move to an escalation. But the fact that Israel is given a green card in being told that we support that the Americans support them unconditionally certainly does put us at a precipice of war. On the other side of things, and I mentioned BRICS earlier, we do have the Russians and the Chinese also urging for a de-escalation and saying that at the heart of all of this should be a ceasefire in Gaza. If that can be achieved, then the tensions rippling across the entire region would certainly simmer down.
Does Iran have the appetite and the resources to go all the way? Should they need to, and would they be able to defend themselves against what is effectively a NATO bloc of countries, unofficially so, who would either come to the defense of Israel or continue to attack Iran in the name of global peace, so to speak, right? The Obama administration went through great strain and pain trying to denuclearize Iran, unsuccessfully so. So Iran remains a nuclear threat globally. So that perhaps might be playing in the head of war negotiators. But outside of nuclear activation, what is the depth of Iran's military network and infrastructure and in its ability to defend itself?
Oliver, let's be very clear that the Iranian nuclear program is a civilian nuclear program, and they opened themselves up to inspections by the IAEA. They engaged in the JCPOA, the agreement with the P5 and Germany, to have relief from sanctions. And it was only the Americans under Trump who withdrew from that agreement. So whilst we talk about Iran being a nuclear power, we tend to forget that Israel has nuclear power and has never opened themselves up to inspection by the IAEA, has never admitted to having this nuclear capability. And the risks that present itself from Israel being a nuclear power protected by an empire is considerable. Does Iran have the capacity to defend itself? I think its audacious action on Saturday was quite a clear indication that they do have Significant capacity, first of all, in deploying the drones. And I think it's worth mentioning that they had given notification 72 hours before they deployed those drones. The second was the ballistic missiles that were precision maneuvers that attacked the two base, the two military bases, all of which happened without any casualties on the Israeli side, whereas the attack on the consulate resulted in 13 people being killed. So I think we also need to have a little bit of a fair assessment of how things have played out. And if what Iran had conducted in terms of that choreographed, calibrated maneuver on Saturday is any indication of what their capacity and capabilities are, then I think that they certainly do have much more capacity and capability to be able to respond to an Israeli retaliation under these circumstances. In addition to that, they've utilized this maneuver as an intel operation, as an intelligence operation, to also identify where the weaknesses in the American and Israeli defense protection mechanisms are. So they've been able to penetrate that Iron Dome. They've been able to penetrate through the arrow defenses that Israel and the Americans have.
Should there be anything read into this moment, given the context that Iran had showed its support for the Yemeni Houthis when they, for instance, attacked Israeli ships in the canal at late last year?
Well, the Houthis have come out very, very clearly and said that they would only be identifying ships that are owned and operated by Israel or by collaborators with Israel, including the UK and the US. And they've stuck to that, and they've also minimized any casualties in those actions. They have been very clear that should there be de-escalation in Gaza and an end brought to the genocide with a comprehensive ceasefire, that they would stop their attacks in the Red Sea. What we also saw on Saturday was that Iran captured one Israeli-owned vessel just off the coast of the Strait of Hormuz. And this is also an indication that should there be an escalation from the Israeli side, that their shipping routes, including this through the Strait of Hormuz, which would affect the oil access, would certainly be at risk.
Yeah. 086-000-2032. Give us a call. 086-000-2032. You can also send me a WhatsApp voice note on 0614-104-107. 0614-104-107. Does, and perhaps I think this is crucial, circling back to Gaza, does the Israeli government have the ability, or at least the capacities, to defend itself from Iran, while also continuing to extend and continuing to sustain a humanitarian onslaught in Gaza?
It's becoming increasingly difficult for them to do so, as you have so many detractors from the IDF and people who are objecting against the conscription and compulsory conscription into the army as well. But the strategy appears to be trying to open multiple fronts and then casting aspersions on Iran as being supportive of what they call proxies and the Iranians call allies in the neighboring countries. And by doing so, then making Iran the boogeyman and identifying them as such, trying then to recall the idea of normalization with their neighbors. So again, normalization and the continued agreement that they have with the Jordanians and the Egyptians, and then trying to lure the Saudis in. I found it very interesting last week that the Saudis have begun scaling back quite considerably on their investment into NEOM, which was a massive project, development project that they were working on. Now, to scale it back by almost 95%, to me, indicates that there may be a preparation for war, because war is costly. And even this exercise that took place on Saturday, some of the economists have been looking at the financial impact of that, indicating that Iran seems to have spent no less than about $30 to $40 million. And the defense from Israel, collectively with their allies, may have amounted to up to $1 billion. So it is an extremely costly issue when it comes to escalation of war.
Yeah, but big money wins wars. Iran has long money, but not against the the collective strength of Israel and its Western allies, and some of its allies in West Asia. How war is won by those who have the resources to sustain it the longest and the most aggressive. How then does Iran suppose it could defend itself when it comes down to resources?
You know, Oliver, I think that I may read winning of wars very differently. It's not always in terms of the casualties. And I mentioned earlier that Israel is actually losing the war in Gaza because they're not meeting the objectives that they have set out for.
Yeah.
And similarly, I think that the resilience that the Iranians have and that they've shown over decades of sanctions that have been imposed on them may put them in stead to be able to withstand a war against them. However, the greater risk that we have is that this could escalate to a more global war if we consider the BRICS nations coming into the defense of Iran and particularly Russia and China entering into a situation like this. So I think that's where the emphasis on de-escalation at this stage is so important, and to try and avert any further provocation towards war. I think that the region can ill afford to have another war take place, although many of the countries, including Saudi Arabia, the UAE, have been some of the most prolific buyers of manufacturers of weapons, it still puts the situation quite difficult for the rest of us, because we don't want to experience a war that can escalate to such global proportions and have an impact on our economies as well.
Yeah. 086-000-2032. I'm taking your reactions to the 086-000-2032. I'm also taking your WhatsApp voice notes and reactions to this on 0614-104-107. Domestically, Zinat, does this give an additional lifeline to Benjamin Netanyahu's already ailing political career?
His political career is really in tatters, and I think this is one of the reasons why the war cabinet has met twice already, and there doesn't seem to be finality in terms of how they would respond to the Iranian military maneuvers. We do know that they are set for elections in 2026, but Benny Gantz, one of the opposition, has been calling for early elections to be held as soon as this year, so that he can contest against Netanyahu and actually bring Netanyahu down. They've been accusing Netanyahu of taking right-wing decisions in being supported by characters such as Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, who are warmongers. And so there certainly is a pushback within Tel Aviv itself, trying to find a means to be able to be answerable to the populace who are protesting against the war and against Netanyahu.
Yeah, and what are then his prospects of being able to try and delay as possible an election next year?
It certainly is within his repertoire to turn to having additional war tactics, and that's been a survival mechanism that Netanyahu has used for decades. Failing which, he's going to be ending up in jail. And so this provocation against Iran is part of his survival mechanism. Whether he can see that through, whether they are ready to move forward on that is rests very much so on the support that they expect from the United States. But we must remember that the United States is also going to an election. And Biden is not likely to win that. We're looking at Trump returning, most probably. Trump is also a great supporter of Israel, and he's already expressed that over and over again. But his tactics in the Middle East are very different from the Biden administration, in that he was pushing for normalization. But also for scaling down of US forces in the region, which is not something that Biden has been keen on. And today, the Biden administration was meeting with the Iraqis. Now, we know that Iraq has asked for the United States to withdraw their troops from Iraq. This was a decision that was taken by the Iraqi parliament. The Americans are reluctant to do so, and they claim that their bases in Iraq are there to assist Iraqis in defeating ISIS. We're not so sure ISIS is as big a threat as the Americans would have us believe. But a lot of those forces were utilized in terms of participating in responding to the drone attacks on Saturday. So those discussions that are happening in the United States today may have an impact on whether American military assets remain in place in the region.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it there. Really, really do appreciate it. Zeenat Adam, really appreciate your time this evening, the deputy executive director at the Afro Middle East Center.